All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So what happened to your class? It got cancelled.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was
All right, it's good. Bigger audience here. continuing on with Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. This evening we're going to start another section under the main heading of Kirtan. However, is there some prasadam you can give, or you have a dummy or something? It's a little hard to compete. Yeah, just give us something to suck on, or yeah. That's it. Okay, I had a couple myself, so. Alright, so we're going to look at unauthorized and offensive chanting. We've talked a bit about the efficacy of chanting, 1,000 times the potency if it's done in the dham or anywhere where the deities of the Lord are installed. And even unknowingly, if people hear the holy name, as we heard about the first visit to Hungary by Hari Kesh, people become transformed by hearing the holy name. However, still, there are authorized ways, because Lord Chaitanya says that any place, time or circumstance, you can chant Hare Krishna without restriction. But at the same time, there are 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name. When you're just doing casual chanting, then it doesn't matter. You can chant anywhere, anytime. But when you want to become serious about getting the benefits of chanting, then there are actually 10 offenses to be avoided. And one has to apply oneself very carefully and attentively to the chanting of the holy names. So, can somebody get me some water? A few corrections that Prabhupada made when he heard devotees chanting things that were not so bona fide. One of those was, this was an issue that came up about 5 times when I was with Srila Prabhupada, and that was Vajja Hare Krishna. I really have to get a drink. My throat is seizing up. This was in France, August 6, 1976. It was the last day of Prabhupada's stay at New Mayapur. And he was waiting in his rooms on the first floor, and down below, directly below his rooms, was the temple room, and everybody was getting ready for the installation of Krishna and Balaram. So after the Krishna Balaram Mandir had been opened in Vrindavan, the managers in France there decided that it would be nice to have Krishna Balaram deities at New Mayapur. So all the preparations were being made. Prabhupada was waiting to be called to go down for the festival. And there was a big kirtan going on all morning. Prabhupada was sitting quietly in his room, waiting to be called, when he rang the bell and asked for Hari Kesh. Hari Kesh was Prabhupada's secretary at that time. When he arrived, Prabhupada told him, "Listen, what is that?" Indicating the kirtan downstairs. "He is adding something to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Go and stop it and bring him here." Hari Kesh wasn't sure exactly what Prabhupada was referring to, but he went straight down and pushed his way through the packed temple room. Prituputra Swami was pounding a drum, leading a loud and fervent rendition of the Maha Mantra. A group of sweat-soaked brahmacharis were gathered around him, clashing kartals, stamping their feet, waving their hands, and leaning into an intense exchange of the holy names with Prituputra. First he chanted, and then them. Every time he took the lead, he prefaced the Maha Mantra with the word bhaja, chant. Hari Kesh butted in and brought the singing to an abrupt stop. He informed Prituputra that Prabhupada wanted to see him. Prituputra entered Prabhupada's room apprehensively, wondering what was going on. Prabhupada, whose sharp ears had picked out the extra word, demanded to know where he had learnt this Bhaja Hare Krishna mantra. He was angry. "There is no Bhaja in Hare Krishna. Where did you get this from?" Shaken by Prabhupada's sudden unexpected reproach, Prituputra turned red. I heard it in Vrindavan." Prabhupada's wrath immediately intensified and his face flushed with the thought of his disciples once again becoming polluted by the non-ISKCON elements of Vrindavan. He exploded. "Why are you taking this from the nonsense Babaji's? Who has told you this?" A shocked Prituputra tried to reassure him. "No, no, not from the Babaji's. I heard it from our own men." Prabhupada still fumed, but he eased off a little bit when he understood that it had not come from an outside source. Still, he strongly warned his disciple, "Never chant this Bhaja Hare Krishna again. The Hare Krishna mantra is complete in itself and requires no additions." Promising not to repeat his mistake, Prituputra returned to the temple room to resume his chanting, this time without the addition. It is one of Prabhupada's great fears that ISKCON devotees will become increasingly polluted by outside influences that are not strictly in line with our Sampradaya's pure devotional principles. Just as he did with the Gopi Bhava group in Los Angeles, he acted quickly and firmly at the very first sign of contamination. This is one of the... because this trend, you know... it's been going on in ISKCON since time immemorial. Somebody decides to add a little word here or change a word there and, you know, put their own unique little flavor onto the chanting somewhere or another. And then immediately it goes all over the world. Oh, some new form of chanting. Let's get, you know, take it up immediately. So it spreads everywhere. So somewhere or another in 1976 it had started becoming fashionable to add this word bhaja to the beginning of the chanting of the mantra, because the intention was to, you know, by the chanter to infuse or enthuse the responders by saying bhaja Hari, you know, everybody sing Hare Krishna Hari, like that. But in effect what they're doing was changing the mantra, and Prabhupada immediately heard it. It sounds harmless, but it's not, as you'll see later on. So that was the first time that I heard Prabhupada get on somebody's case about chanting Bhaja Hare Krishna. Then in August of 1976, about 2 weeks later, we were in Hyderabad, and Prabhupada was there for the temple opening there, and there was a devotee called Ram Shraddha. He was one of the local brahmacharis. He was a good chanter, a good singer. And he also had started singing another version of Bhaja Hare Krishna, but instead of singing Bhaja Hare Krishna, he was singing Bolo Hare Krishna. And again, Prabhupada immediately caught on and he stopped him from doing it. Then again, 2 months later, less than 2 months later, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. This was on October the 6th. And some issues had come up. One devotee had arrived from America. I'll mention him in a minute. And he had started singing a variation on some tunes that we already knew. And he was singing some bhajans that we hadn't heard before. And so I had a bit of a debate with him about it. And I decided to go to Srila Prabhupada, you know, with the discussion and see what he had to say about it. So on October the 6th then, I'd given Prabhupada his massage and I brought this couple of issues up with him. So one of them was about, you know, a variation on the chanting of the Jai Radha Madhava prayer. They weren't singing it the way that Prabhupada sang it, they were singing it in a slightly different way. So as far as the new version of Jai Radha Madhava is concerned, Prabhupada said that it was all right. But he added, Bhaja Hare Krishna is not all right. I never asked him about that, but the thing is, they add these things without asking, and this is the danger. It is better just to follow the guru. So that was October. The next time it came up was in December of 76. We were at the Hyderabad farm. Prabhupada was getting quite weak. He had a lot of problems physically. So he was very weak. But we went there for a couple of weeks. Prabhupada wanted to start that farming project there. When we left Vrindavan on December the 2nd, as he got into the car to drive to Delhi and then to fly to Hyderabad, he said, now we are going to start a new phase of this movement. And then he didn't say anything more. So Jagadishu was his secretary at that time. He said, what is that, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, Varnashram. So we got down there. We were there, we've been there about a week or so. And on December the 9th, Prabhupada took a short walk. We went out along a path, and in the middle of the field, there was a banyan tree. Prabhupada headed for that and sat under it for a while Hansaduta led a kirtan. Then we returned. As we neared to the farm buildings, Prabhupada again mentioned not to sing bhaja in front of the Maha Mantra. Ram Shraddha, one of the local brahmacharis, is in the habit of singing Bolo Hare Krishna, much to Srila Prabhupada's disapproval. So that was the fourth time. And then the fifth time was at the Allahabad Kumbh Mela. So we went there on, we left Bombay by train on January the 10th. It was an all-day and all-night trip, and we got there early the next morning. Prabhupada had actually had it in mind to stay there several weeks, but when we got there, there was some problems with the arrangements for our camp. The devotees that had made all the arrangements had actually got a little bit bamboozled by the organizers of the Kumbh Mela. They thought they were being given a good prominent site for our pandal. It turned out that we were way, way away from everywhere. And nobody could find us. So there was no pandal. And then we were supposed to have mass prasadam distribution. Again, the devotees that organized it naively thought that every day they would be able to go out into Allahabad and buy all the boga, you know, from the local stores. Of course, 5 million other people were thinking the same thing. So there was nothing available. And all the camps that were there that were distributing lots of prasadam had actually shipped it all in on the train when they arrived. They brought it all with them, you know, tons of grains and sabjis. So we had no prasadam distribution either. So Prabhupada didn't spend very long there, about 4 or 5 days. Again, he was, you know, quite sick. It was very cold. It was mid-January in Allahabad. It's freezing at that time of the year. And So he wasn't going out of his tent very much. On January the 14th, Prabhupada did not go for a walk, and he received Guru Puja and then gave class in his tent. He talked about how all the Mayavadis are offenders. Why are they offenders, he said? Because they simply make up their own process, and this is demonic. In reference to a pandal right next to ours, which had its speakers blaring all night long, proclaiming the glories of some man named Kabir, he said, they are saying, Kabir says this, and Kabir says that, but they'll never chant Hare Krishna. At this point, he took the opportunity to mention once again about the fad of chanting Bhaja Hare Krishna that some of our men have adopted. He condemned it as an invention, and he quoted, Mayavadi Bhasya Sunile Hoi Saranasha. Just as the Mayavadis are inventing and others are singing Nitai Gaur Radhi Shyam Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram, so he said this Bhaja Hare Krishna should be stopped. So the first four times that I heard him pull people up about it, he didn't say why. He just said, don't do it. But this fifth time, then he explained, this is actually the Mayavadi tendency. You're not satisfied with what you get from the guru, from the acharyas, and you invent your own process. You add something on, change something, because you think it's as if, you know, it sounds better than the original. So Prabhupada was very, very cautious about that and concerned that we not, you know, make that kind of error. Now, one kind of bhaja that was being sung in ISKCON at that time came from Srila Prabhupada, and that was Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. And if you hear any of the original or the older recordings of Prabhupada or his disciples singing the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, you'll always hear that they begin with Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya. But in 1977, Prabhupada stopped it. So not long after that, you know, correction there at the Kumbh Mela. Then, of course, we went to Mayapur for the festival. Prabhupada got really very, very, very sick. He couldn't attend the festival programs. Then in mid-year, after being in Rishikesh, he rushed back to Vrindavan, and it seemed like he was going to leave at any moment. So all the GBCs had been called to Vrindavan. So Tamal Krishna Goswami by this time had become Prabhupada's permanent secretary, and he was keeping a diary. As I had kept a diary, then Tamal kept that up. Actually, when I left the party, I was not on the party at this point. I had been sent back here to Australia. That was in mid-March when I left Mayapur on the last day there. I realized, you know, I'd been keeping a diary the whole time that I was traveling with Prabhupada, and there were lots of things there, you know, that weren't recorded in any other form. They weren't recorded electronically or otherwise. And if I hadn't written them down, then they would have all been lost. And I was thinking, because originally when I kept my diary, I was thinking I was only going to be Prabhupada's masseur for about 3 or 4 days. That was the original arrangement. But I was thinking, you know, this is such an amazing turn of events to get the chance to actually massage Srila Prabhupada. You know, it probably wouldn't occur in lifetimes to get, you know, that opportunity to do personal service to somebody of Prabhupada's stature. So the first night that I started, I went down to the local bookstore, the New Jamata bookstore, and I bought a blank notebook, and I thought, I'll write down whatever happens, and then in 10 or 20 years, I'll be able to look back, and I'll be able to remember all the details of what had happened. Later on, I was added on, you know, more permanently, and so I just kept on writing. And then after about 6 or 7 months, I started to get a clear, you know, realization that this is not just for me, this is for other people. This is a historical document recording what Prabhupada is doing. So I was doing that fairly conscientiously, as much as I could. When it came to the end of my tenure and I was to come back here in mid-March of 77, I suddenly realized, now if nobody keeps this up, then there'll be so many things that happen, so many things that Prabhupada says, and they won't be recorded down and it'll all be lost. So I went to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I told him, Maharaj, and I've been keeping a diary, now I'm going, so you have to keep it up, you have to keep a diary. So initially he was reluctant. You know, he was the secretary, Prabhupada was very, very sick, so there was lots of things that had to be done to organize, etc. So he said, maybe. I'm very busy, I won't have the time. So I pressured him and I told him, Maharaj, you have to do this. This is very important. Otherwise, what do we know, you know, of what's happened in the last few years from the other servants and secretaries? You know, nothing's been recorded and so many things have been lost. So you've got to do this. It's very important. So, well, okay, I'll think about it. Maybe. That was as much as I could get. So you'll see Tamal Krishna Maharaj's diary, which is published, TKG's diary. It begins around about April the 18th, if I'm not mistaken. So I left the party on March the 13th, so there was about a month's gap. And then I think it suddenly dawned on him that actually, you know, if I don't write things down, there are many things which will just be lost. So he started recording in his diary what was happening, and he kept that diary up to the departure of Srila Prabhupada in November. So this snippet is from TKG's diary. This is May the 23rd, 1977, in Vrindavan. This was the same day that Prabhupada drafted his will. It was the first time that he'd made an official will. And at 3 p.m., Prabhupada signed his will, and he had Upendra Gopinath, who later on became, about a week later, became Bhakti Charu Maharaj, and myself witness it, myself being Tamal Krishna. During the Kirtan, Prabhupada twice instructed Yashodhanandan Maharaj not to sing bhajya before Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Was it because of the bogus groups who chant this word first? Prabhupada said to chant Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So that was the first time he brought it up. And then about a week later, on the 29th of May, I was there. I just arrived. I just walked in the room, actually. I'd come back from Australia. And then Prabhupada brought this topic up again very briefly. There was some discussion, well, if we don't sing Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya, what do we sing? So Prabhupada said, you can say Sri Krishna Chaitanya or Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, but never Bhaja. You just glorify these five personalities and they will take care of everything. So that was it. Then that became, you know, an ISKCON standard after that. Nobody chanted Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya anymore, and everybody switched over to Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And then there was also at the same time a little discussion about what about, you know, Jaya Advaita or Sri Advaita, and Prabhupada said, you can do either, it's alright, so you take your pick, Jaya. Because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, of course, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, Jaya is the word. So then there was a question whether we sing Jaya Advaita or we sing Sri Advaita. And Prabhupada said, it's okay, it's both the same, but don't sing Bhaja. So Bhaja Hare Krishna and Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya, definitely not. So Prabhupada explained at different times about what happens if you don't chant in a bona fide way. So on September 17, 1976, he was in Vrindavan. This was just after the controversy that we read about the other night with Nitai Das making the claim that if you don't chant 16 rounds, you can't go back to Godhead in one life, etc., etc. So Prabhupada was speaking in the class on the first canto, chapter 7, and the story about Ashvatthama, and how by simply chanting a mantra, he invoked untouching water, he invoked this Brahmastra weapon, which is an equivalent to an atom bomb. And Prabhupada spoke then in the morning's class about the tremendous power of mantra, or regarding the Vedic weapons. He said, this mantra weapon is so strong that it can be manufactured simply by touching water with the mantra. Just like we take the mantra, apavitra pavitro va sarvavastam gatopi va yasmaret pundarikaksham savaya. So this same process. Do not think that it is something ritualistic, external. No, it has got meaning. And if you chant the mantra properly, if you follow the rules, so you must be expert in chanting the mantra. He gave the example of Haridas Thakur, who avoided the allurement of a beautiful prostitute by the strength of his advancement in chanting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, simply by chanting you'll get all success in life. It is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's blessing. Iyahaite sarvasiddhi hoi baitama. Simply by chanting one gets the highest perfection. So we should be very careful and follow the regulative principles. Then automatically you'll be perfect. Yesterday in class, on the 16th, Prabhupada had mentioned how the power of mantra had been verified by some doctors in Lucknow, but he didn't tell us how. So this morning he related the story. Just like sometimes, the snake-charming mantra can be purchased in the marketplace. But if you do not make yourself perfect in about chanting the mantra, then it will not be effective. I'll give you one practical instance. It is not a story, it is a fact. You'll hear Prabhupada say that many times. I've looked it up in the folio, and Prabhupada uses that little phrase many times. It's not a story, it's a fact. Perhaps some of you know my friend who came here, Dr. Ghosh. He was from Allahabad. He was one of Prabhupada's old friends when he had his pharmacy there. So he told me there was a case in Lucknow University. They were students. So there's a big building, and there were two or three snake-biting cases happened. So some snake charmer was invited to find out that snake and take him. So he came, and he took it away, the snake. Then this Dr. Ghosh and his class friends, so they were medical students. So naturally, the so-called modern scientists, they don't believe in all of these things. You're also a medical man. Is that a fact? Yes. So they became very inquisitive. So all of them, they went to that snake charmer. So he was a Mohammedan gentleman. So he knew that, oh, these medical students, they have come here to see the fun, how the snakes are being charmed. So they inquired, what is that magic that you can catch up the snake and the snake cannot do any harm to you? So he said, it is possible by mantra. So they challenged, oh, your snakes, I think they're all poisonless. And they cannot bite. The poison teeth, the fangs, have been taken away. No, no, they've got everything. So he took one out and he showed them here. So then to have some fun, he had many snakes. So he let them all come out of the box. And immediately all over the courtyard, they began to run all over. And these medical students, they became afraid. They were fleeing this side, that side, that side. So then the snake charmer told them, don't be afraid. So long as I am here, they'll not bite you. So this was spoken by Dr. Ghosh. It was his personal experience. So the mantra has got so much power. But not that you can purchase the mantra and chant. That will not be effective. You have to make it perfect. There is a process how to become perfect in chanting the mantra. So Prabhupada told us that this was just a material example. And if we seriously chanted the Maha Mantra, which is completely spiritual, then the effect would be unlimited. He said that if we chant it properly only once, the Hare Krishna Mantra can destroy more sins than the most simple person can commit in a whole lifetime. That's the power of Hare Krishna. Nama Parada Shunyam. Without any Nama Parada. If we chant according to the principle, then the mantra will act so nicely that the mantra will keep you always in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the power of the mantra. Don't think it is a hobby or it is something superfluous. No, actually, this mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna himself. So, if you are allowed to keep yourself constantly in company with Krishna, then just imagine what is your position. If you keep yourself always near the fire, then certainly you will remain warm, and there will be no attack of cold or anything like that. So if we constantly chant the Hare Krishna mantra, then we are not in this material world. But if we purposefully again come to the material world, that independence we have got. So it's a nice example. I met that Dr. Ghosh a few times. Nice man, but completely mundane. You know, pious, religious man, but didn't really understand Krishna consciousness at all. When Prabhupada was there in the last 6 weeks in Vrindavan in 77, we again called Dr. Ghosh. He came, oh, you should put him in the hospital and, you know, dialysis and this and that. All right, sorry. Thank you very much. So, but at least, you know, he gave that verification. The power of chanting the mantras, because I'm sure many of you, you know, you probably know someone or have some experience of these snake charmers. In Mayapur, we also have one Mohammedan gentleman who learnt this art of charming snakes with the mantras. And he goes around whenever there's any snake bites, and the villagers call him and immediately chants, and then they recover. So it's going on. Yeah, it's not some imagination. Anyway, Prabhupada's point was there that there is actually a process for chanting the mantra. If you follow the process, you get immediately success. If you don't follow the process, it will not be effective. And that includes the Maha Mantra. So, there was an example actually from here in Melbourne. In 1973, there was a group of devotees under a couple of sannyasis that split away from ISKCON. It was the first major split. In fact, it was the only split in ISKCON during Prabhupada's time, but it was a major split. We lost practically every devotee in the Brisbane temple. The Auckland temple was shut down, even though there were deities there. The Sydney temple lost a good number of devotees, and here in Melbourne we also lost a good number of devotees. And they went off with this sannyasi, Siddhasarupananda, and his sidekick was Tusta Krishna Swami. So he was based in New Zealand. So they had their own ideas. They had some objections, you know, to the discipline in the ISKCON temples. Because in those days, you know, we were all out preaching every day, and book distribution was being stressed very heavily. So in 73, 74, that was when book distribution really started to blossom. But it was controversial. We were going out and, you know, selling as many books as we could, as Prabhupada said, by hook or by crook. Sometimes we were not, you know, very finessed at doing so, and people became a little disturbed. We were just talking the other day about the Melbourne Council and this gentleman called Squarejaw, who was the chief council officer out on the street there, and how he used to harass us and chase us down the street with police and arrest us, you know, for selling books and things. But sometimes, you know, we had from Flinders Street Station up to Burke Street, I think it is, we would have on that double block, we would have 18 devotees out standing on the street selling books. So you can imagine, you know, if somebody didn't get, you know, stopped by the first guy, then there was, you know, another one and another one and another one and another one. So nobody could walk down the street practically without being approached. So naturally they got a little disturbed. But anyway, the point was that Prabhupada wanted the books to go out, and so we were doing that. But there were some devotees that didn't like to do that. They couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle being out on the street. And also, you know, the temple discipline was a little difficult for some people. You had to get up for Mangal Arati. I mentioned two nights ago about when I was the temple commander in Vrindavan. And I would go around at 3:30 with a gong bang, 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 and wake everybody up. And if anybody didn't come to Mangalarati, I would write their name down in a register. And then they didn't get breakfast that morning. That was the system. Yeah, if you want breakfast, go to Mangalarati. So, you know, we were disciplined. Some people just couldn't handle the discipline. They couldn't handle, you know, having to get up and, you know, come to Mangalarati, etc. So they developed their own philosophy. You know, they wanted their own style of preaching. And as far as they were concerned, worship of the deity was just for neophytes. Yeah, if you're more advanced, actually, all you really need to do is just chant Hare Krishna. You don't need to worship the deity. Don't go out selling books because that disturbs the public, so it's counterproductive. You should do things in a much more mellow way. So they had their own ideas about how to preach Krishna consciousness. So Siddhasarupananda, of course, before he joined the ISKCON movement, he had been like a guru in Hawaii, and he had some following, about 40-50 people. And later on they met Prabhupada's disciples. They became, because they were Brahmavadis at that time, you know, the white light merging into, you know, the Brahman and whatever. When he met Prabhupada's disciples, they actually philosophically defeated him or showed him, you know, more. So he actually took it, and then he took up Krishna consciousness, they all did, and then eventually they joined ISKCON. And most of his followers kind of fanned out into different temples, but they were based in Hawaii. By 1973, he had been given sannyas by Prabhupada, but by 1973, he couldn't tolerate the fact that he was not the center of attention anymore. You know, that he didn't have his own following and he couldn't do what he thought was the best thing. And he didn't like working under the GBC or with the GBC. He had his own ideas and he just wanted to be independent. So, you know, at a certain point, the word went out and then all these devotees, you know, left the temples to go and join with him. So they had their own group. So, you know, in the name of not disturbing the public, they stopped wearing devotee clothing. They stopped chanting on beads. You know, they got the clickers instead. If you want to know where the clickers came from, that was the first one. You know, so they could just keep their hands in their pockets and pretend that they weren't devotees, basically. That's what that's actually all about. And the whole thing was you just chant. It doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to strictly follow anything. You know, just chant. I mean, the real fact was that they couldn't, most of them couldn't follow the regular principles. They certainly couldn't get up for Mangalarati. You know, so that way, there was a conflict between them and ISKCON. So, in July of 74, of course, Prabhupada came here to Melbourne. We weren't in this temple at that time. We were still in Burnett Street in St. Kilda. I think Prabhupada was staying in Ugrasrava's house in Brighton at that time. So, this Tushta Krishna Swami, he came to see Srila Prabhupada. They still kept up their connection with Prabhupada. They didn't like ISKCON, but they still, you know, wrote to Prabhupada regularly, took advice from him, and so Prabhupada kept on dealing with them because they were his disciples. So, when he came to see Srila Prabhupada in early July, he was no longer wearing his sannyasi clothing, tilak, or with a shaved head. So it was known that this group were also not strictly following the principles. They criticized ISKCON's leadership for emphasizing book distribution, which they claimed was simply disturbing the public. And for the same reason, they didn't dress as devotees. They also claimed that deity worship was for neophytes, and it was not necessary to living in a temple to become Krishna conscious. In truth, life in a temple was too regulated and demanding and strict for them. However, their abandonment of the sadhana of spiritual life was rationalized by their claims to be keen chanters of the holy names, and that this in itself was all that was sufficient for making spiritual progress. You just chant Hare Krishna, that's the real thing, nothing else. Prabhupada was not happy to see his sannyasi disciple minimize the value of the standard practices of devotional life. And after using the analogy of trying to light a fire using wet wood, Prabhupada told him a story. So this is a nice story. He said, so pure devotional service is like a flame. All other things are smoke. So you must get the flame, otherwise your business will not get done. So naturally, when we fan, when there is smoke, and then as soon as the flame comes, oh, then there is no smoke. So again, you fan it. So let the flame come. Then everything will be all right. So the flame is spiritual life. The smoke is material life. So you have to fan. Then gradually the flame comes. Otherwise, you'll be satisfied only with the smoke. You were cooking with smoke for 300 years. So, Prabhupada then he told them a humorous story. He said there was one man, he was a yogi. So, he was approached. It is not a story, it is a fact. So, he approached one big man. So, people are very inquisitive to see some yogic magic. So, this rich man, he asked this yogi, what you have learned about yogic perfection. So, I can stay in the severe winter season, I can dip myself in the water up to my neck and practice yoga. So how long you can remain there? All night? Yes, I can remain the whole night or as long as you want. All right, if you remain within the severe cold, within the water, overnight, then I'll give you some such and such presentation. So he agreed and he did it. And in the morning when the man came, so he said, oh, you were successful. So then either he had no money or he didn't want to give his gift. So then he had one advisor. What shall I do? So, no, sir, you cannot give him any money. Why? Now, there was heat. Oh, how there was heat? So in India, they have this Akash Pradeep. During the Kartik month, on the top of the temple, they put a lamp. Yeah, so this is our Vaishnava principle. The lamp is there on the head of the roof. On the roof there is a bamboo, and on top of the bamboo there is a light. So it doesn't mean an electric light. Nowadays they use electric lights, but it means a flame, a lamp. So this man was in the lake. So the advisor said, so you have seen that lamp was there, so the heat was coming. So the lamp was 3 miles away, but still he advised, yes, there was heat, and therefore he could stay in the water. So what can be said? He was a poor man. So there was another servant of that big man. So he appealed to the yogi. And the yogi appealed to him that, see, I took so much trouble, and he did not pay me anything. So the servant said, don't worry, I shall see that you were paid. So then that servant, whilst he was employed, there was some urgent business. So the rich man said, tomorrow I'm going to such and such a place. You must come and go there with me. So suppose he was to go at 10 o'clock. So at 9 o'clock the messenger came. You were ready? No, I'm just cooking. When I finish my cooking, I'll take my meals and then we can go. So there was delay and delay. And then finally the rich man became very angry. And he went to see him. So, why did you not come? No, I'm cooking. Where are you cooking? So now he's got 3 bamboo poles. And on the top, there was one pot, a rice pot. So, he was giving the fire here. So, the fire's down here. The pot's way up there on the sticks. So he saw the 3 bamboos. On the top there was a rice pot and the fire down below. So that rich man, he came and saw, what kind of cooking is this? No, there's heat. It's going on. So how do you do this? Such a nonsense. No, if the temperature from the lamp on the roof in the sky could protect that man in the river, then why it will not be cooking? So then he could understand this is the reply. So then that yogi was paid. So then Prabhupada used that example. He said, so this kind of progress, cooking with 3 miles above the pot and a little fire, it will not act. There must be a proper adjustment of cooking. Then you can cook food and eat. A little smoke or a little fire and 3 miles away the cooking pot. In this way your cooking is a useless attempt. One must be serious to cook. So there is a method how to cook, and if you don't adopt that method, and if you cook in your own whimsical way, you'll never be able to eat. If you say, oh, I should cook in my own way. And if you adopt that process, will it help? Na sedim, na avapnoti, na sukham, na paramgatim. So as a result of this meeting, Tusta Krishna again adopted his sannyas attire, and under Prabhupada's direction, began the construction of a temple on their farm, and also they formed a book distribution party. So Prabhupada very nicely illustrated, you're making up your own process. You claim that you're chanting, but what good is your chanting? Because you're not following the process. So you can chant for 300 years, you'll still, or 300 lifetimes, you'll still not get the result. So, good example there. So again, that was in 74. So in 1976, when Prabhupada came here to Melbourne, after a week, he went to New Zealand. So during the week he was here in Melbourne, that was April of 76, Tusta Krishna again came to see him. And he invited Prabhupada to come to their farm. So Prabhupada said, all right, when I come to New Zealand, we'll go and visit your farm. Then they sent word that now Prabhupada is going to their farm and he's not going to the ISKCON Center. So then our devotees rang up, what's going on? And then the word came back to Prabhupada that they're, you know, spreading this rumor that you're only going to their farm and you're not coming to the ISKCON, and now you're not coming to the ISKCON Center. So then Prabhupada immediately cancelled. He said, no, we'll just go to our center. So when Prabhupada was dealing with them, he always would refer to ISKCON as our, and he would refer to that group as them or their. So anyway, Prabhupada did go to Auckland, and they came to see Prabhupada at the temple. We were only there a day and a half. We arrived late at night, I think on the 25th night, or 26th night. And then on the 27th, they'd arranged for a press conference. There was two or three reporters came. Prabhupada was discussing with them about our activities. And apparently some local city officials are trying to ban the devotees from chanting in the street. The reporter mentioned this, and Tushita Krishna confirmed that there had indeed been some publicity in one or two other cities, some favorable and some unfavorable. Prabhupada was pleased, because he said if there is agitation against chanting, it is also good. Even if they say that Hare Krishna is bad, that is also good, because at least they've chanted Hare Krishna. Prabhupada told the devotees that they'll become triumphant if they continue to chant and distribute books. But he cautioned them as well. They think Hare Krishna movement is disturbing. They are a rascal civilization. So let us try our best. What can be done? You are also, and then he particularly referred to Tusta Krishna and his group. He said, you are also helping in this movement. So don't spoil the movement by manufacturing ideas. Don't do that. You go on in the standard way. Keep yourself pure. Then the movement is sure to be successful. But if you want to spoil it by being whimsical, then what can be done? It will be spoiled. If you manufacture whims and disagree and fight amongst yourselves, then it will be another edition of these so-called movements. It will lose the spiritual strength. Always remember it. Don't make it an ordinary musical vibration. It is a different thing, spiritual. So the mantra is not an ordinary sound vibration. We have to keep the mantra in potency. It's interesting. We have to keep the mantra in potency by offenseless chanting, by remaining pure. If you pollute the mantra, then it will lose its effect. So this is, because we say Krishna is none different from his name. But in order to realize that, you have to follow the process and purify yourself from all your material, affections, and develop your affection for Krishna. If you don't do that, then you just take chanting as some means for, material gain, or, so that you can, as we mentioned, Prabhupada mentioned before, once chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, destroys more sins than the most sinful man can commit in a whole lifetime. Yeah. So if we think that, oh, if we just chant Hare Krishna, we can go on being sinful, and Krishna will destroy all our sinful reactions. That in itself is the worst offense that you can commit. And then you'll never get out of the material world. In other words, the mantra will lose its effect. The idea of getting liberation or freedom from sinful activity by chanting, that is a side effect of chanting. That is not what we chant, why we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. That is simply, you know, a bonus. It's a side effect. That in, to enter into Krishna's pastimes, then, you know, we need to be freed from our sinful reactions, the entanglement of, you know, maybe millions of births of karma. So Krishna gives us that, moksha ishami. He'll immediately give that. But the real purpose of chanting is to develop our love for Krishna, to enter into his eternal pastimes. That's the purpose of chanting. So to do that, then, we have to be pure. As Krishna is the supreme pure, then if we want to associate with the supreme pure, we have to also be pure. Purity means no selfish desire. Anukulyana Krishna Anushalanam Bhakti Rutama. When you do everything simply for the pleasure of Krishna, then that's purity. When you do it for your own benefit, whatever way it is, that's not pure. That's an impurity, and therefore we cannot associate with Krishna. So chanting Hare Krishna is the means, but it's also the end. To realize that Krishna is not different from his name. That is the perfection of chanting. Yeah. To understand that there's no difference between Krishna and his name. So like that, we have to keep the mantra in potency. Otherwise, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sang, or he commented on the bogus chanters, that they singing Hare Krishna, but it is simply alphabets. It sounds like Hare Krishna, but it's not. Krishna is not present. It's just the alphabets, that's all. Because they're not following anything. They're not doing it for Krishna's pleasure. Okay, so it's very important then to follow the process. That process we get from the Guru, from the Acharyas, from the disciplic succession. So this issue came up around about the same time. This was on August the 30th in 1976. Prabhupada had just opened the Hyderabad temple. We came up after Janmashtami and Vyasapuja down there to New Delhi, and then we celebrated Radhashtami. So there was a little pandal outside the front of... At that time we just had a very small semi-detached house in Lajpat Nagar 3. It was better than the one that we had previously, but there were, you know, there was a lawn, and the landlord allowed us to put up a little pandal. So Prabhupada went there for that. So as he sat on the small stage, Lokanath Maharaj led his men in an exuberant kirtan. After singing the standard prayers and the Maha Mantra, he began to chant, Gaunichananda Bol Hari Bol Hari Bol Gaur Sri Advaita Bol Hari Bol Hari Bol Gaur Sri Gadara Bol Hari Bol Hari Bol, with a lot of emphasis on the response of Hari Bol Hari Bol. Prabhupada suddenly signaled him from the stage to stop it. He apparently didn't like it, but he didn't say why. So then a week later we were in Vrindavan. And Lokanath Maharaj came with his men. He had a whole bunch of new brahmacharis that they'd made in the last few months. They all got initiated in Delhi. And then they all came to Vrindavan. So on September the 6th then, after the temple darshan in the evenings, there's always a big kirtan during the arati, especially with Lokanath Maharaj and his men here, as they are extremely enthusiastic chanters. However, they have developed a style of kirtan that is a little different from the ISKCON norm. When the kirtan reaches its climax, they gather around in a group and they start singing, Nitai go, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And they get completely carried away with chanting Hari Bol. Sometimes they go on for 5 or 10 minutes singing back and forth. Hari Bol, 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 and they're going on and on and on, Hari Bowling. So sometimes it goes on even longer than the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Some devotees are not happy about it, although no one can fault their enthusiasm. Harikesh Swami objects to it quite strongly. And that was because previously he was with Prabhupada in India, and Prabhupada had actually given him some specific instructions about the standards that he wanted for kirtan. So he in the evening, he went into the garden to ask Prabhupada's opinion. Prabhupada's routine at that time was that in the afternoons after his nap, instead of having a darshan in his rooms, he would go into the temple room about 5 o'clock, and he would sit under the tamal tree in the temple courtyard, and then people would come and sit around, and then, you know, either he would speak or he would have one of his disciples speak. And then when the doors opened, ready for the arati, evening arati, Prabhupada would retire to his rooms and he would leave the devotees to chant in the arati. So when he came back into his rooms, he would go into his back garden. If any of you have been to Vrindavan, you know, there's a small back garden. In those days, it was nice. It's not so nice now, they changed it. But in those days, there was a little brick path, and there was a lawn, and there was a pond that had just been installed during the summer, whilst Prabhupada was away in America. And they'd put a stone slab against the back wall as a bench, and they put this bamboo and thatched kind of half cottage affair, little roof over the bench, and then put some thick cotton mattresses there for Prabhupada to sit. And they would turn on the fountain in the pond. Prabhupada would sit on the seat there and just relax and chant. So it was very, very pleasant, very nice. Just, you know, September evenings in Vrindavan is really blissful. So Harikesh came out to the garden to see Prabhupada. And he was complaining about this chanting that was going on. So since we have never heard Srila Prabhupada sing this mantra, Harikesh had doubts whether it was actually a bona fide practice. Prabhupada had stopped Lokanath's kirtan at the Pandal in Delhi, but at that time he had not given any reason why. Now this evening, Prabhupada, although not too upset by it, made it clear that such chanting was not approved by him. He told us that we should mainly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He said Nitai Gaur Hari Bol is alright because they are bona fide names of the Lord. But the real point is that we should strictly follow only what the Acharyas have given us. This is the process. He said the Acharyas only chant all 5 names of the Panchatattva, not just 2. So although there is no offense in chanting the names of Gaur Nitai, but if we deviate and chant our own made-up mantras, then he said this is Guru Ravagya, or disobeying the orders of the spiritual master and the line of Acharyas. To make advancement, he said, in spiritual life, we must follow in the line of the Acharyas. And Prabhupada referred to the ashram at the back of our temple. So immediately behind our temple, there's a laneway, and on the corner there's a little ashram, and they're always chanting there. They have like 24-hour kirtan. However, they sing Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram, and it's just going on and on and on. So Prabhupada said that it is offensive because it is a deviation from the line of Acharyas. So gradually other devotees came into the garden as we talked. Charanaravindam, who was a brahmachari from England, whose great-grandfather was General Gardiner, who had been in India for quite a long time. He was one of the British Raj there. Now his great-grandson had become a devotee of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada liked that, actually. He was sitting when we first arrived. It was just me and Charanaravindam there in the garden with him. Charanaravindam had made all the arrangements. He put the seat and the, you know, the thatched roof over it. He had actually dug what was originally a lawn. He dug this huge crater in it and then put this pond in. And, you know, he put this kind of lotus leaf motif around the edge of the pond and then painted it hot pink. So it was quite, you know, dazzling. And then in the middle he put a fountain affair. And on the top of it he found this little figure of Lord Brahma with his four heads. So he drilled a hole through the top of it. He put that on the top of the nozzle. You know, so it's like Lord Brahma's head's there, and then the water would shoot out from the top. So when we went in there, Prabhupada was relaxing, Charanaravindam was chit-chatting about different things to Prabhupada, and I was fanning Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada was kind of laughing. He said, "Just see," he said, "previously the British were in control." He said, "Now I'm a poor Indian, but I have two Britishers fanning me." So he thought that was quite ironic. So Charanaravindam, he liked to go in the garden because he was Prabhupada's gardener. It gave him an excuse that he could be there whenever Prabhupada was there. So he would come in and out. And Prabhupada didn't mind at all. There was another devotee, Swayambhur Das, an Australian. And we were joined by Vipramukhi Das, one of the pujaris, who had come seeking Prabhupada's blessings because he is setting out in the following morning to open a center in Turkey. Quite daring at that time. And they actually did go there, and as soon as they got there, they were arrested and put in jail. After some time, they were let out. But anyway, so there was a small group this evening sitting at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, in a congenial atmosphere, cooled and soothed by the sound of the water gently flowing from the lotus fountain and the nectarian words gently flowing from Srila Prabhupada's lotus lips. Swayambhur wanted more clarification on what Prabhupada had said about the chanting of Nitai Gaur being a deviation. In his mind, there was some contradiction. And so he put it to Srila Prabhupada to resolve. He said, "Prabhupada, you wrote in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Chaitanya Maha Mantra, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, there is no offense in that chanting." And so therefore in Kali Yuga it is actually more beneficial. Prabhupada repeated his comments to Hari Kesh Maharaj. He said, "The offense is that what is spoken by the acharyas, if you do not follow it, that is offense. Guru Ravagya. To chant Gornitai is no offense. But if our previous gurus have chanted Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita, so why should we go beyond that? Then it is Guru Ravagya. Even if there is no aparad, but because Guru, Kaviraj Goswami, is sung like that, and my guru is sung like that, then we should follow that. We should not make any deviation. Then it becomes Guru Ravagya. Shruti Shastra Nindanam Namno Balad Yashahi Papa Buddhi." So it becomes one of the items of the Dasavida Aparad, the 10 offenses in chanting. Guru Ravagya. So Swayambhur asked him, "Is it more beneficial for people to hear the Panchatattva mantra than the Hare Krishna Maha mantra?" "Oh yes," Prabhupada said. "You are going to Hare Krishna through Nitai Gaur. Nitaya Karuna Habe Braje Radha Krishna Pabe." But he added, "The principle is don't try to manufacture. Because you were not experienced, so what nonsense you will manufacture, that will be offensive. Better to go on with the simple thing." Swayambhur said that he knew someone who chants the Panchatattva mantra on his beads. Prabhupada raised his eyebrows. "Who?" That boy Richard that lives in Radhakund. He was referring to a tall, thin New Yorker, like my Srila Prabhupada and many devotees for his humble attitude, who had been living in Radhakund for quite a long time. Prabhupada shook his head in disapproval and sympathy. "Rascal. That is his bad association. Therefore I say, don't follow these so-called Radhakund Babajis, Narakakund Babaji. And they smoke beedies, I have seen." So Richard is still there? He's still around, Richard, actually. He lives in Kansas. He comes to Mayapur now and again. Nice guy. Old now, though. Well, relatively old. So that's Prabhupada's point there, that even if what you're chanting are bona fide names, but if you're not following the process and chanting them in the way that they're given by the previous acharyas, it's guru or avagya. And as long as you're committing one of those 10 offenses in the chanting, you cannot realize the fruits of the chanting. You have to be completely free of those 10 offenses. So this, I mentioned before about this devotee that came from America, and he was singing, you know, a different version of, you know, this Jayaranda Madhava. And so that also came up around about the same time whilst we were in Vrindavan. So going back to July, when Prabhupada was in New York, he had received a letter from Damodar Pandit Das from New Vrindavan. So one of his questions was that he had heard some tape recordings of Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Krishna Das Babaji, singing some devotional songs. So he wondered if they were bona fide or not. He also asked if it was a good idea to make a comparative study of different philosophies from the Krishna conscious standpoint. He felt that it might be useful in our preaching. So Prabhupada replied that he had not heard the recordings of his godbrother, so he could not make a judgment of them. But apart from this, he said, you should just go on chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Maha mantra, and the Panchatattva mantra, and don't divert your attention. You cannot understand the meaning of the Indian songs, and simply parrot-like chanting of these songs has no value. So that was the first we heard of that tape. So then in Vrindavan, a few months later, on October the 6th, then this devotee had arrived from Chicago. His name was Tranakarta Das. And he is very interested in singing different bhajans. Several times I've heard him sing Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunjabi Hari, Jaya Gopi Jana Balaba, Jaya Giri Varad Hari, Jaya Giri Varad Hari, rather than sing it in the way that Srila Prabhupada does. In view of what Prabhupada had recently said, and that's that meeting that we had with Swayambhu, about not changing anything given by the acharyas, I approached Tranakarta and asked him where he had learnt this new version. He said he had heard it on a tape made by Achyutananda Swami. He was also singing other bhajans that are not in our songbook, and he said that he had got them from Prabhupada's godbrothers. He even had a tape of himself singing a song that had been written by Prabhupada's godbrother, B.R. Sridhar Swami. So we had a bit of a debate about the merits of what he was doing. And so I decided to bring up the matter to Srila Prabhupada for clarification. I brought up the issues about chanting new versions of existing songs and the chanting of new songs. As far as the new version of Jaya Radha Madhava was concerned, Prabhupada said it was all right. But he added, Bhaja Hare Krishna is not all right. The thing is, they add these things without asking, and that is the danger. It is better to just follow the guru. Prabhupada confirmed that the song and the singing of his godbrothers was also all right. Nevertheless, his preference is clearly that we stick to whatever he has introduced and not be so interested in running here and there to gather up new songs, as this may cause a distraction for us. As he has said before, our Western mentality is to always seek out something new. We are never satisfied with what we already have. Yeah, there was a little song sometimes, I think, that Prabhupada had heard it in his youth, which he would sing to illustrate this, you know, doing something new. He would sing it, do something new, do something new, stand on your hands and clap your feet, but do something new. So he said, this is our Western disease. We're always, we have to, you know, build a building after 10 or 15 years, tear it down, build another one, you know, like that. So then the next day then I had reported to Tranakarta what Prabhupada had said. So Tranakarta Prabhu gave me another tape this morning featuring Akinchana Krishna Das Babaji, another of Prabhupada's godbrothers, chanting some stotras. So I presume that was the same tape that Damodar Pandit had written to Prabhupada about when we were in New York. After I told Tranakata about what Prabhupada had said yesterday, he wanted to verify whether this tape was bona fide. I played it for Prabhupada to hear during his massage. Again, Prabhupada said that it was all right to listen to, but he shrugged and he said, "They'll never be able to pronounce these things, neither they will ever be able to understand them. So, what is the use?" Just chant Hare Krishna. Okay, so, it's 10 to 9. All right, I'm going to finish at this point. We will talk tomorrow morning about Nitai Gaur Radhi Shyam, Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. And the reason why Prabhupada said that is also not bona fide. And a few incidences that occurred around that chanting. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes at the disappearance days in Vrindavan Mayapur, then some of Prabhupada's disciples will say that Prabhupada said, "You just chant 16 rounds and follow the four regular principles, you will go rectified." So can you give some clarity on that?
You missed out on the previous classes. I covered that a couple of days ago. Just briefly, yes, Prabhupada said very definitely, if you just follow the four eights, chant your 16 rounds, you will go back to Godhead in this life. Because that became a big issue, chanting 16 rounds. One of Prabhupada's former personal servants and Sanskrit editor, Nitai Das, he started putting it out that you have to chant 64 rounds. If you don't chant 64 rounds, you can't go back to Godhead. So that became a big issue, and he left ISKCON because of it. And Prabhupada slammed him, you know, very heavily because of it. But that's, if you listen to the previous recordings, it's all there. They have been, yeah, they're all available. Who's in charge of recording here? You, yes. Yes, it's all on the internet. So all the previous segments of this chanting seminar, you can download from there. Last year's recordings weren't recorded. At least I didn't record them. Normally I used to do that for 6 or 7 years, then I stopped doing it. But generally the local temples, they record, you know, the seminars, and then they stick it on the temple website. So I don't know. Is there anything from last year? The ones that I did here in Melbourne, you have, yeah?
Yes.
So you're saying the temple recordings were done, but not the Bhakti Vriksha program ones. But this year we've been recording the Bhakti Vriksha as well, yeah?
I was a person here, so I recorded.
That was recorded? Okay, well, you'd have to ask. You know, there were recordings going on. I saw people had their iPhones. So, you know, if you fish around, you should fish around a little bit and see if you can track down who's got them. Then you'll have the complete series. Well, the rest, there's stuff on ISKCON Desire Tree, but I have my own website, lotusimprints.com. And there is a audio section, and if you go there, there are 5 or 6 different seminars complete, the whole lot. So you can download them from there for a very, very small contribution. But they are there, yes. Any other questions? Yes, Mataji. Can you sing the Gayatri Mantra as a bhajan? No. Normally, the Gayatri Mantra is chanted. That is one mantra that is meant to be chanted silently. And, you know, when you receive it from the spiritual master, he speaks it into your ear, and you chant it silently on your fingers. That's the bona fide way to chant it. I know in Bali, they sing the first line of the Gayatri, Yeah, in the temple, in all the temples, that's part of their, that is their chanting. They sing the first line of the Gayatri Mantra. But that also was given to them by a fellow from, an Indian man from Varshana, who had kind of stumbled across Bali in the late 1920s. He went there and then he was shocked to hear them chanting Sanskrit mantras. And, you know, Bali in those days was very, very isolated. And, you know, it was still Hindu. The rest of Indonesia, well, at that time it wasn't even Indonesia. It was, it was Java and what do they used to call it? East
Timor.
Huh?
East Timor?
No, not East Timor. There was, it's called the Spice Islands. And it was East something or other, I can't remember now. Anyway, Bali was like this little dot that nobody ever went there and nobody ever left there. And this gentleman, what was his name, Sharma or something? I met him one time. He had gone there in the late 1920s and he was shocked to see that it was Hindu culture. He had no idea that it was there. And the people there had no idea that there was Hinduism outside of Bali. Literally, they had no idea. And they were chanting some mantras, and he asked them, what are you chanting? They said, this is the Gayatri Mantra. And then he said, no, it's not. What you're chanting is the invocation for the Gayatri Mantra, but it's not the Gayatri Mantra itself. So he taught them the actual, you know, the first line, our first line of Gayatri, Om Bhur Bhuswa, like that. So that's, they, you know, from the 1930s onwards, they started chanting that. So, anyway, I mean, the thing is that we don't do that. You know, we do our Gayatri very silently. It's meant to be silent. Okay? Mataji, how are you? Very nice to see you. Well, what's the difference between Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya? Tamal Krishna Maharaj's note there, when it first came up on May the 23rd, 1977, was he asked that question in his diary. He said, was it because of the bogus people, you know, chanting at the back of our temple? So they sing, you know. And generally the Mayavadis, they tend to sing Bhaja this and Bhaja that. So I think part of the reason, as Tamal Krishna noted, was to distinguish our chanting from their chanting. And then also it was to bring it in line with what is in the Shastra. Because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita you don't find, you know, that bhaja, but you do find Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, like that. So just to bring it in line, Prabhupada did that. Although it was, you know, the chanting of Bhaja Sri Krishna Chaitanya came from Prabhupada himself and was practiced for 10 years, 11 years. I think Prabhupada just wanted to bring it back in line with the Shastra. Just as a footnote on that, you know, those people were singing Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam, Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. So Prabhupada said we could change that and we could sing Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Because that's the three deities that we have in Vrindavan. Nitai Gaur, Radhe Shyam, Jaya Krishna Balaram. So he said, you can sing this.
He said that.
Huh?
He said
that. Yes, he said that. He said, you can sing that. Yes. No, no, you can sing it. Prabhupada said it. any other questions? Yes, Prabhu. Well, I just mentioned that before. You were not here for the first half. We did discuss that. That did, it did come up as a part of the discussion on May the 29th. And there was some question, do we sing Jai Advaita or do we sing Sri Advaita? And Prabhupada said either one is okay. But Badger is not. Any other questions? Yes, sir. That is coming up. The chanting of other groups that are closely aligned with our Sampradaya, but maybe a little different, that's coming up. Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. It'll come up tomorrow. So tomorrow morning and then tomorrow night. Yeah. Okay, so we are definitely finishing. It's time for arati. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.